Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. You can also catch us on iHeart Media platforms now, as well as anywhere you get your favorite podcasts. Just search the Rob O'Donnell Show. Those podcasts are loaded up each and every day, fresh for you, anywhere between 3 and 5 a day. So check them out there. It is 410, 87 degrees here on this Friday, August 15th, 2025. You did it. It's Friday. We made it together. Hopefully you have some great plans for the weekend. It's going to be a nice weekend. Don't worry about that isolated stray shower. That's just summer for you. We know how to deal with that here in Northeast Pennsylvania. And again, today is the last day that the sun will set after 8 o'clock. Tomorrow, the sunset is 7:59, and it starts dwindling from there. So get the most out of what's remaining of your summer. It's coming around. Today was reform at the United States Naval Academy, and this is where they all have to report back, and that's started today. We do have this meeting going on in Alaska with President Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin of Russia. It has passed the 40-minute mark, so that is a good sign that it wasn't a few minutes and done, that things are actually going on. It is turned from a one-on-one meeting to a three-on-three with two interpreters. Now, interpreters are not counted in the count, but they're always there, and there were an interpreter on either side of either president. On the United States side, it was Secretary of State Marco Rubio and Special Envoy Steve Witkoff there with President Donald Trump. It is unknown who the two are that were representing Russia with President Vladimir Putin of Russia. So that is taking place now. Again, we are about 40 minutes into that summit that's happening. There is a podium and an auditorium set up for press and people after it if they choose to make public statements. We'll see what comes of that, and we'll bring that to you live if that does happen. I told you when I was narrating what was happening at the beginning of the show, as they were both presidents were respectively walking off their plans and came to one another, shook hands, chatting and smiling and walking down a red carpet with flanked by four F-22 fighter jets and a podium there that said Alaska 2025 for a photo op for the press corps that was there. And I did say while they were walking on that red carpet, it appeared that planes did fly overhead, and Trump looked up and clapped his hand two or three times. Putin looked up in the sky, expressionless, and then looked at Trump and kind of nodded his head and smiled. We do know now that that was a B-2 bomber flanked by some stealth fighters, probably F-22s. That is a message being sent, because those are the very planes that we sent to deal with Iran's nuclear facilities. So again, a show of force, a show of strength, a show of power and the American might. I don't know if it would have been my call to do that, but I'm not the one making those decisions, and in hindsight, it's something that makes me smile, but let's hope that that has no bearing on the discussion that's going on right now. And again, that discussion, the president did make it known that if there was nothing and if he was just being jerked around by Vladimir Putin, he was going to end it and walk out. Within minutes, he would know. It's now going on 43 minutes that this meeting has started. It started precisely at 3:30. Our time, 11:30 Alaska time. So we are monitoring that to break and whatever comments are going to come from there. And we will bring it to you live when either heads of state come to the podium to discuss what transpired at the meeting. And hopefully we find out something good for the future of the world, because it is about world peace here. This is a battle that we are distant from. We have been financially supporting, so it would be good not to have to do that. But war is bad regardless of where it takes place, and should only be an absolute necessity. And the way wars have been fought lately is just not traditional war. It's really no ends to a means anymore to where you used to beat your opponent into submission, and then, go on from there. And there was a winner and a loser. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore, because these fights aren't happening the way they have, and that may be a good thing or a bad thing. So we'll monitor this. It's 4:14 here. We'll move on with the show as well. Success Academy Charter Schools. And I brought this story up because we were talking about the charter school that was being built up on Montage Mountain. Well, here's a success story out of New York City. A Success Academy Charter School's test scores were nearly double of those of New York public school peers, as per the data. Success Academy Charter School far outpaced the Big Apple public school peers in state exams this year, according to data released Thursday. Pass rates for pupils at the charter school network in grades 3 to 7 were nearly double those of their public school counterparts, the figures show. Charter school system boasted that 92.5% of its 9,280 students in those grades passed the 2025 English Language Arts exam, while 96.2% proved that they were proficient in math. Those are outstanding numbers. And one of the reasons I bring this up is because a good reason why Governor Josh Shapiro got elected to governor is he was promising these charter schools and voucher programs here in Pennsylvania, and has been silent ever since then. These are success stories around the nation time and time again. And here, 92.5% of its 9,200 students, almost 9,300 students, passed the English Language Arts exam, while 96.2% proved they were proficient in math. We believe that and have proven that when children have access to excellent schools, they achieve excellence, Success Academy founder CEO Eva Mazowski said in a statement. It is absolute tragedy that so many are prevented from accessing the kind of school that would allow them to fulfill their potential. Success Academy saw its students' ELA pass rate jump up more than 10%. Now, that's English as a second language compared to the previous year. While a modest 1.2 bump was recorded in math. I'm sorry, that was English language arts. Bumped up, and math bumped up 1.2%. By comparison, students in the nation's largest public school district, while also notching better scores than last year, was still largely missing the mark. Some 56% of public school students in grades 3 through 8 met the proficiency standards in English and language arts, where 56.9% passed in math. 56.9% in the Department of Education's New York City public schools, 96% in this charter school. It's 10,000 students. Success Academy also pointed out that its Black and Hispanic students excelled far greater margins than pupils of those racial and ethnic groups in the DOE schools. Black students at the charter system had a 95.5% pass rate in math, compared to just 43% in public schools. Hispanic students at Success Academy secured a 96.8% proficiency rate in math, and DOE students in the same ethnic group garnished only 43.1%. Black and Hispanic students also hit the mark on the ELA exam, 91.8% and 93.2% proficiency rates, respectively, while those made the grade in DOE schools were only 47%. You're talking half. 47% compared to 91.8%, 43% compared to 93%. While the state tests are typically given in grades 3 through 8, Success Academy's eighth graders took the region's exams for ELA and algebra instead. Success Academy enrolls about 22,000 students across 59 elementary, middle, and high school, while the DOE provides instruction for roughly 1.1 million students across 1,800 schools. Simply put, if you were a parent, where would you want to send your school to? Where would you want and think your child got the best future? Competition is good. This model is excellent. Put the money with the child and let parents make the best decision for their children. Competition is good. but we've come accustomed to funding failing systems. Medicaid, Social Security, public school systems. How do we fix these systems? Obviously, we have to. I don't think we should get rid of public schools. But they should be result-oriented. Job security should be result-oriented, not tenure. You can't disregard the numbers here. And remember, this was a promise from the governor as he was when he was running for governor and has went silent on allowing parents to have the opportunity for this very outcome. And then looked the other way once he got his position. It's 4:20 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather together. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Going to go to the phones now. We have George from Dunmore. George.
How are you, Rob?
All right.
I just called to discuss the numbers that you just stated about charter schools compared to public school systems. I wasn't sure if you're aware that in public school systems, they have to count special education, people with learning disabilities, and everyone, they take the same test. So the numbers are very skewed, and it's very hard for a public school to match what a charter school could do because they are not required to teach or take those students in their enrollment.
Well, again, this is based on this one New York City charter school, which handles 22,000 students. I'm not saying there's more discrepancies in our public schools take that, but I also know people who have left the public school system with their IEPs and their children to go to charter schools, so they do take those children. They may take those children, but they do often.
Do you know if the school you're referencing takes those children?
It's the Success Academy Charter School.
But do you know if they take students with IEPs and learning disabilities and stuff?
I do not know that, no.
Okay. You're big on doing your homework, so it's your topic. I just thought I'd ask it. I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I know it's very important.
Well, regardless if they take that, do you think that would account for scores being at half the level, 47% as opposed to 96%?
No. I am for charter schools, but it's not as skewed as those numbers sound. That's all. I'm making a point.
But it would all.
Charter schools do a wonderful job.
You're talking about 3 or 4% of that, not 60% or 40%.
Yeah, it's closer to about 20%.
20% of our school students have special education?
Or IEPs, yes.
Well, IEPs is not special education. My daughter had an IEP. She was never in special education. It was for accommodations.
You use
because
IEPs to make your point, so I could use it to make mine. And you're talking both ways.
No, you're talking both ways. You're including IEPs as everybody in special ed, saying there's 20% of students have IEPs.
You include them in charter schools, too, which I'm not sure that's accurate.
Well, I'm sure the charter schools have IEPs and 504s as well, because they have to by law.
You don't know if the school you're referencing does, though.
First of all, I'm telling you, any school, regardless charter school, cyber school, or anything, has to honor a 504 IEP.
Yes.
Okay, so they do have them.
If they're accepted, yes.
If they're accepted.
Yes.
Well, that would be a hell of a lawsuit if they didn't accept it, don't you think?
No, they don't have to accept any student. Once they're there, if they get one, then they have to follow the law, but they don't have to take any student they don't want to.
So they can discriminate on the students they take based on a medical condition or a disability. That would be against the law.
You might be right. You're right.
Well, I was an advocate for students for IEPs for dozens of years because my daughter had one. So I do know a little bit about this.
And you're right. I said that.
All right, and again, I agree with you that the numbers aren't apples and apples. But when you're talking 47% compared to 96%, I think we're missing the goal that this is a great alternative for a lot of students out there, and here it proved in especially students in who are Black or Hispanic that are excelling in these schools. Competition is good for our public schools. That's all I'm saying here. I'm not saying there could be a 3 or an 8 or a 10% difference because they'd have to take any student, be it disciplinary reasons too. you know, you have to take that into account, where a lot of our public schools, you know, until they have legal bearing to kick a kid out because of disciplinary reasons, it's very hard for them to do so.
I guess we're more on the same page than I thought. It didn't sound that way the first time.
All I'm saying is these charters, like I said at the end of it, I don't think we should do away with public schools whatsoever. I think competition is good, and choice for parents of students that may be better in a different environment is what's good.
Fair enough.
All right, George, I appreciate
your time.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. And that's all I was saying there. Listen, I'm a product of public school. My wife's a product of public school. And I went to public school in New York City in the Department of Education from kindergarten all the way through college. My wife the same. We both went to city universities in New York City. My kids are products of public schools, and they're all doing phenomenal. I'm not saying public education, you get with it what you put into it as far as education goes, with some caveats to that. But I think the choice, and one of my choices was always there, I'll pull all three of my kids out and put them in cyber school or homeschool them, because we had the opportunity to do that. And you know what? If I would have did that at the time, I think it was $11,000 per student. Well, that's the cost of a teacher that school district is losing. Because believe me, I wouldn't put them in that school district's cyber or charter school. I would do my own thing and do it to where it also punished the school district that made me and forced my hand to take my kids out of there. But again, three kids pulling them out of school, that's $33,000. That's a cost of a teacher. So, you know, if a lot of people did that, school districts would be a little more in tune with they have to provide a better product. And that's all I'm saying here. There's great teachers out there, great public school systems, especially here in Northeast Pennsylvania. I'm just saying competition is good. Listen, this radio station, if you don't like what I have to say, you can change the dial. You can go to internet radio. You can go to a podcast. There's competition out there, right? And that's what makes this world great. Same thing for other industries, and that includes our public school systems and our kids' educations. It's 4:31 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. As we wait this summit in Alaska, it's the point of the show where we honor our heroes here at home who made the ultimate sacrifice in law enforcement. On this day, we have four. We will start with Detective John Thomas Cousin. Philadelphia Police Department was shot and killed during an attempted robbery while walking outside of his home. After killing Detective Cousin, the suspect stole his weapon. One suspect was arrested after seeking medical attention for a gunshot wound he received when he was shot by Detective Cousin during the robbery attempt. Next, we have Corporal Leo Michael Kozeknik, Pennsylvania State Police in 1977, was killed when he was struck by a vehicle while helping a stranded motorist. The corporal and a tow truck operator were standing on the side of the Schuylkill Expressway next to the disabled vehicle when the 20-year-old driver from another car merged from the left lane to the right lane for some unknown reason and struck Trooper and the truck operator, killing them both. The driver had been en route to his grandfather's funeral. He was not injured, but sent to the hospital in a state of shock. He was arrested and charged with homicide by motor vehicle. Detective Edward Gaughan, Philadelphia Police Department in 1931. Detective Gaughan succumbed to a gunshot wound sustained 2 days earlier when he was shot by a fellow officer who mistook him for a robber at the 4th and Catherine Street in South Philadelphia. Detective Gaughan had shot and wounded a suspect and was bending over him when the other officer shot him. Patrolman James Golden, Dunmore Borough Police Department in 1900. Patrolman James Golden succumbed to a gunshot wound sustained the previous day while attempting to arrest two men who were fighting outside a saloon near the intersection of Chestnut Street and Willow Street. One of the suspects resisted arrest and struggled with Patrolman Golden. The man's brother had retrieved a .32 caliber revolver from inside a nearby barbershop and handed it to the man, who then shot Patrolman Golden in the torso. Patrolman Golden was taken to Lackawanna Hospital, where he died the following day. The subject fled the country to his native Italy following the murder. He was recognized in Italy as the suspect in a murder that occurred 13 years prior. He then fled to Buenos Aires, Argentina, where he was arrested in November 1905. The Lackawanna County Commissioners denied the money needed to extradite him from Argentina, and the man was eventually released from custody. He was never extradited nor tried for Patrolman Golden's murder. Patrolman Golden had served with the Dunmore Borough Police Department for only 4 months. He was survived by his wife and four children. That was on this day in 1900. And those are our four from here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania that we honor today. We're still waiting from any news on the update. Now we're over an hour that this meeting has taken place. Brett Baer is on the tarmac in Anchorage, Alaska, you know, filling time like we all are when it comes to this specific discussion of, what's exactly happening. And over an hour, almost an hour and 10 minutes now, they have been discussing the team of three each: Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, Special Envoy Steve Witkoff, and the President, along with their interpreter, President Vladimir Putin, and two officials with him and their interpreter, are in a closed-door session now for an hour and 10 minutes. That is a good sign, because we were told that if this nothing was becoming of this, that Donald Trump would walk out. So we'll see if he's a man of his word and if there's something that he can bring to the table or bring to our attention when he comes out of this meeting. I'm sure, as he's no stranger to the press, there will be some words to the press one way or another. Or maybe not. Maybe because there needs to be a second meeting with Vladimir Putin and Zelensky of Ukraine that really solidifies any agreement that's made. And my fear is something's said to here or promised here that ultimately falls apart in the follow-up meeting. And that would not be unlike Putin, Vladimir Putin, president of Russia, to do such a thing, to say, okay, yes, we've made this agreement, and then have it fall apart in discussions directly with Ukraine or European counterparts. So we'll see here. And then you throw in the, what does Ukraine demand? Vladimir Zelensky has had some unrealistic demands when it comes to the ending of this war. Does he continue to hold on to that? That in itself could ruin any possible peace deal. There is going to be a succession of land. What that is and where exactly those lines are drawn, that's where this discussion is taking place, I'm sure. What's in the best interest of the people of Ukraine? What's in the best interest for the region? And because it is Russia at war, what's the best interest from the Russian viewpoint stance? We'll have to see. But the fact that we're going on an hour and 10 minutes of this meeting, it's a good sign, and hopefully we can bring you some sort of outcome or statement before this show ends. It's 4:40, coming up on 4:42 here at WILK. Time for 2020 traffic and weather. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. 4:46, 86 degrees on this Friday, August 15th, 2025. It's time for Today in History, because how do we know where we're going unless we remember where we've been? Before I get started on the day in history, I am watching the room that's set up for a press conference post-summit with President Vladimir Putin and President Donald Trump. It doesn't appear like there's much action there, except for some podcast hosts and some media discussing and putting content out on there. It's interesting because I know half the people that are in that room. And there was a press request if anyone wanted to go on this junket. But don't know if Odyssey would say, what do you think, Jake? Odyssey sent me to Alaska to cover the summit? Probably not. Wah, 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 wah. That kind of gives you the answer there. So let's get back to today in history. Key events on this day. 1812, Battle of Fort Dearborn, Illinois Territory, present-day Chicago. The Chicago Way. During the War of 1812, Potawatomi warriors attacked and overran Fort Dearborn shortly after it was evacuated under orders. The brief but deadly clash resulted in many U.S. casualties and captives, and the fort was eventually burned. 1914, the opening of the Panama Canal. The U.S.-built Panama Canal was officially opened with the passage of a cargo passenger ship SS Ancon. The monumental engineering project connected the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans profoundly reshaping global maritime trade. 1935, tragic crash killing Will Rogers and Wiley Post, famous humorist Will Rogers and pioneering aviator Wiley Post were killed when their plane crashed near Point Barrow, Alaska Territory. 1943, U.S. and Canadian forces capture the Kiska, the Aleutian Islands. On this date, the Allies landed in Kiska Island, anticipating battle, but found the Japanese had already evacuated. Unfortunately, deadly friendly fire incidents and mines claimed lives despite no enemy engagement. It was 1943 at the Aleutian Islands. 1969, Woodstock Music and Arts Festival opens. Upstate New York, legendary three-day folk festival kicked off, Jaeger's Farm, with over 400,000 attendees, came defining symbol of the 1960s counterculture and music revolution. 1971, Nixon announces wage and price freezes. President Richard Nixon unveiled a 90-day freeze on wages and prices to combat rising inflation, a controversial and dramatic move in the U.S. economic policy. 1971. 1979, the release of Apocalypse Now. Francis Ford Coppola's Vietnam epic debuted in U.S. theaters, later earning acclaim as a cinematic classic. And let me see some highlights for today's news coverage. The end of World War II, VJ Day. On August 15, 1945, Japan formally announced its unconditional surrender, marking the end of the World War II. In the U.S., cities erupted in celebration. Times Square went wild with confetti and cheers, while around the world, the announcement was broadcast amid both joy and relief. And today's historic photo, 1910. A newly surfaced photograph from 1910 documents a near disaster on Wood River Creek. A group crossing on a log narrowly avoided tragedy. An evocative glimpse in everyday life and risk in the early 20th century. That's pretty much today in history. Jake, you got anything to add for today in history? Any fun quotes, notables, anything going on? Jake lost his headphones. There he goes.
Man, 56 years with Woodstock.
Right?
Yeah. And I think this calls for a good Tom Heller story. Don't worry.
You were telling me.
Yeah. You know, he was 15 years old when Woodstock happened, and he wanted to go so bad. And my grandmother wouldn't let him go. And he said to my grandmother, well, you know, so-and-so is going. And she said to him, well, if your friends jumped off a bridge, would you do it too? And he said, yeah. So, I mean, he always wishes that he would have been able to go. I mean, he's got some great, great stories of some concerts that he's been to. I know Concert 10 at Pocono in 1972, that's another good one for another time. But, yeah, 56 years, that's pretty crazy. And like Sue talked about on her show today, tomorrow it's 48 years since Elvis Presley passed away. And she had a really, really good story about how when she filled in back in 2002, when it was the 25th anniversary.
Well, she didn't fill in. I was listening to her on the story. It was actually her job interview.
Yeah. Basically.
Are you putting that up on the stories on the Facebook?
Definitely. Definitely going to put that up.
Yeah, definitely check that out. Yeah. It was her job interview. She remembers it vividly because it was the day of Elvis Presley's death.
Yeah, 25 years. Great content. So, yeah, I mean, rock and roll is pretty special. And I looked up another one. And 60 years ago today, the Beatles performed at Shea Stadium. And that really sort of kick-started the whole stadium concerts and whatnot. So, yeah, pretty awesome. And, I mean, I'm sure I could probably find something off of YouTube with it. So,
no, I think we got enough here.
Oh, yeah.
Nice additions and some personal notations. Sorry, Mr. Heller did not make it to Woodstock. who knows? Maybe it's a good thing he didn't go.
Yeah, honestly.
Let's just say.
But yeah, concerts, hen.
I mean, I know a few people who went to Woodstock who are still wandering around aimlessly today. So maybe for the better.
I remember in 2012 when he went to Pocono with me, he went to both of the races that year. And it was after the June race. And we were just sitting around just waiting for traffic to sort of die out because traffic up there is awful. And like he said, just imagine that whole parking lot that is Pocono Raceway, just a sea of people for as far as you could see. And I remember I asked him, I said, so what do you really remember about that, Dad? And he's like, not much, to be honest. So
there you go.
Good stuff.
Yeah. No more questions needed.
No.
All right, well, it's coming up on 4:54 here at WILK. We'll be back in a minute. Did have at a local restaurant, so we will see where it goes from there, but I can understand the people's frustration here. It's 5 o'clock here.